This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What's going on, NBA Draft fans? Your boy's back. It's the Wolf of Ball Street, the NBA Draft Dude. My name is Corey Tulliba, and today I am your host of the Home and Away podcast on the No Ceilings NBA Draft Show feed. And I got a very special guest with me today to chop it up about all of your favorite draft prospects. You know the deal with this episode of the feed. You get one member of No Ceilings and one very special guest. And this has been a long time coming because I don't think that we've done something on the same feed together since draft night 2020, if I'm not mistaken. But I have with me today Rafael Barlow. He is the director of scouting at NBA Big Board, the host of the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast, and the founder of NBA Draft Junkies. Rafael, what is going on, my dude?
Nothing much, man. How are you?
I am well. We just, you know, got done watching a intense football game. It's the NFL playoffs.
I'm a Bengals fan, so and my mom's a Chiefs fan, so she's texting me now.
I mean, look, I'm a Giants fan, so we got mollywopped by the Eagles last week, so you know.
Yeah.
But you got Joe Cool, so you know, you got a long bright future ahead for the Bengals. So it's all good. And you know what? Now it's, for a guy like yourself, it's officially basketball season with no distractions. And today, man, I figured this is such a wing-heavy draft. I know that Victor and Scoot are the main storylines, but it's almost a little boring because we know that that part of the draft is set.
I don't think it's 100% set.
Ooh. You don't think so? So you think number two is up for grabs. So let's get into it, because I think you caused a little fun stir on the internet. So this is the perfect way to open the show. You said that you think that Brandon Miller maybe could crash a party, maybe Amen Thompson, but you don't think that Scoot Henderson is a lock at number two. Why do you not think he is a lock at number two?
Two things, and it's funny that and the tweet that kind of got everything started was someone had said that Brandon Miller could possibly move up to number two. Mm-hmm. Then I just retweeted it, and it was actually Tyrese Rice, who was a legend in Europe. And I retweeted that if I'm Detroit, or I think I tweeted Detroit doesn't need Scoot. And then mm-hmm. that's kind of what started the whole thing. I didn't see all the comments, but I got so many different people in my inbox like apologizing for draft Twitter's behavior, and I didn't see everything. I didn't see anything that was bad, but it was actually pretty crazy. I got a bunch of stuff. The Ringer kind of mentioned it a little bit. I went to a Mavs game. I sat next to a scout, and I didn't even know him. He just introduced himself, and then he mentioned to me that he was glad I survived it, and I have a lot of people in my DMs just basically talking about it. And some teams feel like he is not, or they don't feel like Scoot is as secure in number two as a lot of people may think. I know. And then just a few days later, the Ringer Draft podcast made a similar statement that I had made, that, you know, if you're Detroit and you're number two, it doesn't make sense. I know consensus says best player available.
Yeah.
But if you take three guys that play in similar style of play and both all of them need the ball, then I mean, you're not doing them any favors. And we always talk about fit is important for player. So you gotta look at it from that point of view. But no, I don't think that it is 100% secure. I mean, I would say he has a very, very great chance at going number two. But I also kind of look at it like, I mean, we've seen some monster stats in the G League this year. I mean, we've seen Ty Washington score 53, like Sharif Cooper's averaging like 26. Scooter's been good, but he hasn't been great. And then for everyone that is saying, well, you get rid of Jaden Ivey, and I know there's a couple years difference, but I think if Jaden Ivey was in the G League this year, he'd average 30 a game, maybe 35 a game. So Scoot shooting, I mean, he got off to a good start. It hasn't, I mean, I think by the time the season ends, he's probably going to be around 33, 34% from three, which is not bad. But yeah, I don't think it's a lock like everyone says it is.
Well, if we know anything about the NBA draft, nothing is really truly a lock. Yeah. Some things, Victor is, you know, unless something terrible happens to him, is a lock. LeBron was a lock. But even last year, you know, up until 30 minutes before draft time, I think Woj was reporting, you know, that Jabari was going to be the number one pick. Mm-hmm. And then Paolo ended up being the number one pick. So that's what makes the NBA draft interesting. And look, I think you make a lot of good points. Detroit, you know, I think Cade is, you're able to put him kind of with anybody because I think he can slide off ball a little bit easier than a guy like Jaden Ivey. But that is a crowded, ball dominant backcourt. I think even Charlotte, like, if you're putting LaMelo fully, you know, off the ball a little bit with a guy like Scoot, either one of those guys, you're probably not fully utilizing them to their full potential. You know, you go down the list, there's a couple of teams that it isn't the easiest fit because a lot of these teams have been in the lottery for a while and, you know, they took the high-powered guard of whatever draft year that guy came out of. So, you know, I still think that a team is going to be scared to pass on a guy like Scoot, maybe from an optics perspective. But look, man, Brandon Miller, the way that he's shooting and playing, yeah, I definitely think that the floor with him is apparent. And in a league that values, you know, we see these guys who are 6'9 and skilled come in and contribute right away in a direction that the league is heading, being switchable and have, you know, having a defensive impact. I could see why it could be a shock on draft night. I could see it. And, you know, with Brandon Miller, he's a guy I've been high on for forever. You know, I've seen the vision for those exact reasons. So I wouldn't be shocked. Now, do you think if you were in that position and you were looking at Scoot and some of the other guys, what direction would you personally lean?
Well, I guess it just depends on what team I'm in charge
of. If you're Detroit, let's stick with Detroit.
If I'm in Detroit, I'm taking Brandon Miller. Mm. Yeah, I mean,
I love it.
You can throw Cade, Scoot, and Ivy on the floor together, and I'm just defending that group with boxes and elbows if I'm another team. And I do think, in theory, Cade can play off the ball, but the shooting, since he's been in the NBA, it's not been like it was at Oklahoma State. Mm-hmm. And even when I look at Cade's, and I'm a big Cade fan, even when I look at back in high school and all that, the shooting was always the big concern about him. And then he had this outlier year at Oklahoma State where he shot like 40% from three. Mm-hmm. And then it's like it's come back down to the same shooting concerns that he had prior to high school. So, I mean, sorry, prior to his freshman year. So, I just wonder about the shooting. I still think he's as best as the primary. And I just think Miller is an easier fit. And then I just also believe just because a person is considered the best player available on draft day doesn't mean that they are going to be the best player in a year or two or three or four or five. And so I think that, you know, I like Cade a lot. I like Ivy, even though I don't think those two are the best fit. I mean, you can make a case and say that maybe if Detroit selected Mathurin, instead of Ivy, that may have been a better fit. But I just think it's just, you know, 3-point guards and what is it? Is it three consecutive years? I mean, that somebody's, I mean,
at some point it doesn't work.
Yeah, at some point it doesn't work. And then the guy that you're probably going to end up trading, you kind of hurt his trade value because he's probably struggling because he doesn't fit.
Right.
So now you're not getting the same fair value.
Yeah. And three guards with questionable shooting upside, and you drafted Jalen Duren, who looks like your foundational big man who, yep, if he ever shoots it, it will not be for quite a while. So things get murky, and that is the problem with the best player available strategy. It becomes hard, especially when you're not really surrounding your team necessarily with veterans that fit. Now, Detroit did, you know, re-sign Bogdanovich, but, you know, he could be gone in a couple of weeks at the trade deadline, yeah, for all we know. But that's interesting. And, man, what do you think Brandon Miller's ultimate upside is? Because if you're going to take him at number two, do you see a Paul George kind of player in him? Is he a guy that you think could potentially be a number one option? Because I don't know if, you know, Jaden Ivey or Cade have really shown like number one option in the playoffs thus far. Definitely flashes of it. You throw a guy like a Brandon Miller in there, do you think he can get to that level? I mean, if you're taking him that high, you're probably, you know, leaning in that direction, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's a guy that if you watch his college film, it's impressive, right? The shooting, the size, the ball handling. I mean, a lot was made about his finishing at the rim, but if you look at his finishing, if you cut the season in half from
it's trending up,
played 20 games, yeah, he's trending up. But if you look at his high school film, you'll see that he has a lot more to his game than he's been able to show.
Yes, he does.
That, at least I thought that his greatest strength coming into this season was a pull-up shooter. He was able to get to his spots and elevate over guys. Of course, that was high school, and he did have some advantages there. But we haven't really seen him because of Alabama's offense as a pull-up shooter off the dribble, mid-range. I think the finishing is going to be fine once he gets stronger. Yes, he's a little bit older, but physically, he still has a long ways to go. I think he's a good athlete. He's just in an unfortunate year where you got the Thompson twins. You got these other guys that are like crazy athletes that make him look average. And I think that, I mean, he has some game in like the mid post as far as footwork. I just think once he gets stronger, and I've heard nothing but like great things. Same thing about Scoot. Same thing about Wimbledon. Yeah. But I've heard nothing but great things about him as a person and work ethic and so on. So I think that he has a high ceiling. And I think that the passing, he's shown some flashes there, but I think he can be a good passer too. So, I mean, I think that he can be a Paul George type guy.
Yeah. You know, the mid-range game, that pull-up ability, that was why I was so high on him coming into the year.
We haven't seen it.
And, you know, I mean, that's, I think, a normal thing for a lot of these offenses. But, you know, you watch that, the Brad Beal stuff in AAU, I always thought he looked like a better prospect than his teammate on that team, and Nick Smith, just based on NBA trajectory for that reason, because that pull-up ability was tough. And you mentioned the footwork. He had it all over either shoulder. And I think that, you know, you mentioned like the athleticism stuff. I think he's one of these guys who just knows how to play with pace.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think sometimes people mistake playing with pace for a lack of athleticism. And I understand like he's not dunking on people's heads all the time and whatnot, but guys like that who can get to their spots, like they just know how to get to their spots.
Yep.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that like just because they're playing slow doesn't mean like they are. They think the game in a way that allows them to just get to their spots and in their own way. And conversely, and it's funny, you know, you talk about age and people being worried. The Thompson twins, who are basically the same age, you know, are kind of the inverse, where Amen is like, you know, shot out of a cannon. And I kind of worry a lot about the skill stuff with him. Like, obviously, he's super skilled as a ball, you know, ball handler, guy who can get to the rim, put pressure, get paint touches, and as a passer. But, you know, I saw him up close a couple of times, and, you know, I'm a little bit worried about the shooting.
Yeah, and I've talked to scouts, and I've actually talked to some players that played against him. And not this season, talking about, like, you know, a guy that played against him this summer, and then another person that played against him in the preseason game. And they're all like, man, the motor's there, defensive potential. But, excuse me, one guy was just like, man, I just don't see any improvement as a shooter. Now, here's the thing. Now, if I am, I always try to think of things from the perspective as a general manager, right?
Yeah.
If I'm a GM and I draft Amen Thompson, whatever, 3, 4, 5, whoever the shooting coach is, hey, blank check. What do you need?
Yeah.
Chip England? All right, I know he's in OKC. You're making $1 million a year? Okay, I'm going to give you 2.
Mm.
Right, 3. Whatever it is. If I have to pay Chip England, who's, I mean, he's, look at Josh Giddey. Like, that was a good Josh Giddey.
Yeah.
If I got to pay you $3 million a year for you to change Amen's shot, it's worth it. Because if he pans out, that's a max player. What's $3 million dollars for?
Yeah, $3 million plus 200.
Yeah. So I definitely have to attach the shooting coach, someone that's like well-renowned. The guy in New Orleans, is, he slips my mind, who got a lot of credit for Fred Vinson. I think that's his name. Yeah, so that's what I'm going to do. I'm attaching whoever it is to him. But there's some concerns. I mean, I've talked to some scouts, and they like overtime, but they feel like the league is professional. They like what they're doing. But and one scout's exact quote was, but once the game starts and they roll the ball out, it's AAU basketball.
Yeah.
And that is like a concern that it may take, you know, it may take some time, which, you know, of course he's a rookie, but it may take some time to adjust to like playing a different level of basketball.
I have the same exact feeling. When I went to the pro day and I saw how professional, you know, the training was, the facilities, I was thoroughly impressed. Yeah. I think that the individual training, the coaching that they're getting is really great. But then again, you put the ball, you know, you tip off and it's just like a dunk contest at times. And it's just not going to be like that. So,
can I add it? And that's what that's what overtime is going to have to sell to continue to be a threat, right? You want it to be fun, you want it to be exciting, and all of that. And so, I think that, and it's still very early in their process, only year two. But I think, like, if you want it to be cool and exciting for, you know, the 16 and under crowd, then they want to see the up and down play, the dunks and all that. But then I just think it's going to lead to more questions about the prospects and the overall style of play, how it translates to the NBA. So they have a lot riding on the Thompson twins, as far as, in my opinion, as far as like the next generation of guys in overtime.
Yeah, you know what's funny? It's like I almost and I had a conversation with one of the people that worked there when I was there, and I was like, I love it. Like, it almost feels like, you know, an academy right now, because you got all these young guys coming in that are so talented, and they're like, no, we're a league. And I was like, all right, like, yeah, like, and they have like the prime deal, and, you know, they have more teams, which is great. And the league obviously is like doing well. And I think it's going to continue to expand, but it had that feel. And to me, that was a positive, because for these young guys, I actually think it's great. Like, they get to play against guys like the Thompson twins early and that talent and get this kind of coaching. Whereas the Thompson twins came in before, you know, the NIL stuff popped off. And when these kids can now do stuff with that and then go to college after they've been a part of the overtime program, that's where I think the league is really going to thrive, and why I think they probably are going to continue to get that kind of talent, because it is a good platform for them to build their brands before they get to a certain point. If they can go then jump to, you know, one of these blue blood schools and really capitalize it on it even further. But, you know, the Thompsons, it almost feel like it was a year or two late for them for everything that happened. I mean, they signed their deals, they're doing fine, and I think that they're developing well. Like, Asar, I think, has made a lot of visible improvements to his game, even if you're seeing it in this like up and down style. I think the shot looks better, the percentages are up, but to me at this point, I'm not really concerned about the percentages as much as I am with the form and, you know, his handle.
Free throw
and
percentage.
Yeah, I mean, of course, the free throw percent, you want to see that stuff go up. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the willingness to shoot certain kind of shots, obviously, like the athleticism and stuff is that's going to pop under, you know, most circumstances that they play in. So that kind of stuff's definitely there. But the fact that the structure is so loose, it does lead to a lot of questions. And then I think Amen, more than Asar, is going to deal with a lot of those questions that we just had with Scoot, where what happens if the Pistons are drafting third, you know, and he's on their board. He's a little bit taller. You can maybe talk yourself into, you know, different kind of positional things. But to me, like, he might need the ball even more than a guy like Scoot does.
Yeah.
I don't know. There, Amen's one of the most interesting prospects I think I've evaluated. And I'm like, I think I'm overthinking it because he is so athletic. And then sometimes I'm like, I don't think I'm overthinking it. I have this feeling in my gut that I'm worried, and not like super worried. I don't have him like crazy low on my board or anything, because I do still think the tools are worth betting on. And I mean, you see like the Spurs, what they're doing with Sohan, and, you know, in such a short amount of time, I think NBA coaching is so good. And like you said, you could throw a bag at one of these coaches, and you know, if you're making that investment, it's one of those home run swings that can really, really pay off. But I also think there's a world, like you said, this draft is unpredictable, and we look at the rankings now and they never match up 3-4 years down the line. And like, there's a world where Jet Howard is a guy that, you know, people think went too low. Now he's kind of on the rise at this point too. And he's a guy I'm very excited I'm going to see in a couple of weeks. What do you think about Jet Howard and his season and how he's popped off? What do you think his ceiling is as far as his draft range?
I think that it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up in the lottery. I would like to see him rebound a little more.
Yeah. For a guy that big, he does not rebound.
Three last I saw.
Yeah.
So I actually talked to a scout about it, and his comment was he thinks Jet is the type of player that's like, my shot is good. I don't need to go down there and mix it up. Hmm. And that was just his personal assessment, because he's like, he has the body. He
looks huge on the court.
Yeah. He said he just doesn't want to go down there and mix it up. His exact words were, and this is not my words, but the scout said that, you know, when you see somebody that big and strong and they just don't want to be in the paint, and he's like, I just think it's a little diva-ish. And so I would have never came up with that term for myself. But I think like he can shoot the ball. He shows flashes of being able to create a little bit on his own off the dribble. I think that I would like to see him have a little bit of mid-post game. And I know maybe I'm just kind of like in the wrong era, but I see, and this is probably a bad comparison, but I see like with the body type, maybe not the first step, but I think he could be a punishing mid-post guy that makes teams regret switching, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what I would like to see out of him. I don't know if he really has that in his game, but I like how he can score coming off screens. He can just score in a variety of different ways. And I think that the passing is a little bit underrated. So I think that he can be a lottery pick.
Yeah, he does have good feel. Like, you see him run some pick and rolls coming off, some DHOs and stuff. And, you know, he just really good ball placement, timing on those passes. The shot versatility is really impressive. I don't think you're alone. I think we're probably close to the same age, so we both value that mid-post game when it comes to, like, a guy who projects as a shooter-scorer. And, like, I mean, he's got big, broad shoulders. He's tall as hell. Like, just as a guy that you could dump the ball into, and he can hit little post fades and little just shoot, face him up, jab step, shoot over him. I mean, that becomes an efficient shot when you can get it on switches. If you're doing it every time down, obviously, like, if you try to, you know, turn him into Carmelo Anthony in 2005, maybe, you know, that's the wrong kind of era. But when you're using it situationally, I think it's something that Jet probably could have in his bag pretty easily with some experiment, like as he grows as a player.
That would be like one of my things I would work on. Doesn't have Melo's first step, but, you know, I'd work on different things to where I can just make teams pay for switching. I mean, you look at teams are switching everything, and there's so many guys in the NBA that are just 3-and-D wings that can't really do anything else to, like, make teams pay for switching.
Yeah.
And I think he has the passing ability to where if he has a mismatch and you go to him a couple times in a row, once the team starts to adjust, I think he can make plays. And so, yeah, that's something I would definitely try to add to his game. And maybe he can do it. And, you know, maybe his dad is from that era where that was popular and his dad, yeah, you know, has some work on it. But, yeah, I like Jet a lot.
Yeah, well, you know, for a 3-and-D wing, you do need to defend, too. And I think that's something with him that there's question marks about. I think on the ball, he's pretty okay at times, like when he's locked in. And he's big. I think he'll be switchable as he gets stronger. And off the ball, I mean, you know, he's not great. He's probably improved at it throughout the season. But I think with a lot of these young guys, especially maybe one who played with a guy like Jairus Walker in high school, who could clean up a lot of messes when you botch a rotation and whatnot, I think he'll be fine on that end. And so, I think that is a pretty good segue to talk about Jairus Walker, who I guess you can include in this wing conversation. What do you think about Jairus's game? He's had some big games lately, scoring-wise. He's one of these gadgety, do-it-all forwards that I think the NBA falls in love with. And when I started watching him at IMG, my immediate thought was, this is a guy who is going to be the guy who rises leading up to the draft, those weeks before where everyone goes, oh man, is Jairus Walker really going to make his way into the top five conversation? Is Patrick Williams really in the top five conversation? To me, he is going to be kind of the Scotty Barnes, Patrick Williams of this draft.
I haven't thought of it from that perspective, but that makes sense. You know, he's a guy that when I watched him in high school, I immediately liked him, right? The passing.
It's hard not to.
Yeah, the handle. And
the grown man body.
Yeah, and it's just a weird combination of skills, because how I do it, I don't watch much during the season. So right after the draft, I just spend the rest of the summer watching high school stuff. Yeah. So I knew the name, but I purposely, like, I'll go to Synergy, and then I'd watch the plays, and I just put them in random order, right? Mm-hmm. And so you just see all these different arenas, every other clip. But immediately I just saw, like, the body, and I'm thinking, okay, this guy's a bruiser. And then right. I see the handle, and then I see the passing, and then I see the upside, and it's like, I really like this guy. I think he's going to be really, really good. And then at the beginning of the season, it looked like he settled into this role player role, and I actually watched him live. And the game I saw live, I just wasn't impressed. It was probably one of his worst games of the season. I think it was against St. Mary's. And he looked like he was struggling between trying to play this complimentary role, but then at the same time trying to get his stuff off. Mm-hmm. And now he's settled into his role, and he's a lot more comfortable, and he's doing the stuff that he did in high school. You're seeing him attack off the dribble. I've seen a little bit of the flashing passes. I still feel like I saw more of it in high school.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be
more effective. He had more freedom for that in high school than he does now.
And one of the things that, and I had mentioned it in an article I wrote, it was, so two summers ago, I was in Miami, and I was at this gym. Bam Adebayo walks in, right? And I'm a Blazers fan. And I go up to Bam, and I just say, hey, man, I'm a Blazers fan. Can you please tell me why the Blazers selected Zach Collins over you? And I said, everything that the Blazers need, from athleticism to defense to another playmaker, I said, you fill all of those needs. Why? What made them think Zach Collins is better than you? So I kind of told him what I did. He says, well, look, whenever you're evaluating a prospect, watch their high school film. Since their high school film is going to tell you what they can do. Mm-hmm. In college, the college coach is all about trying to win games. He's not really giving guys freedom.
Right.
It's like high school will tell you what they can do. College will tell you the role that they can play. And he's like, but if you look at my high school tape, I could handle, I could pass, you know, I could do everything I'm doing now. I just couldn't do it at Kentucky. And he's like, but when you go to Kentucky, you know you have to sacrifice your game. So he says he knew that going along. So he said that's why he felt like the Blazers just didn't do their homework on his high school tape. And he mentioned other teams that were picking ahead of them. So now, and that's why I also saw Ben Carroll last year. Because I was like, dude is playing, you look at his high school tape, he's playing point center.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, you don't see that at Duke, right? And so Walker is my guy this year. Walker and Brandon Miller, who we talked about, are the guys this year that I feel like their high school tape shows me that they are way more capable of doing things that they're able to show in college. And so, I love Walker in an NBA setting where he's running 4-5 pick and rolls or
right.
4-1 pick, you know, just so many.
It's operating so many. From the elbows and horn sets, DHO stuff, roller. He could run it, like you said, inverted pick and rolls. It's funny that you mentioned Bam, because I kind of think that he's, and I'm not saying like if you add them up together, he's going to be better than these guys, but he's almost like if you took Bam and like Patrick Williams and kind of molded them into one player. Because I think defensively, he's going to be able to guard up a little bit more than a guy like Patrick Williams, but he's also a little bit more wingy, even though Bam obviously has shown some tremendous guard skills in the NBA, but he's a little bit more wingy in how he moves. So I've been kind of toying with this kind of like, you know, prospect chemistry between those guys. And I kind of think like, you know, you see Jarris mocked in that late lottery spot in some places, you know, he's more in like the 7-8 range. But I feel like if he drops to the back of the lottery, he is going to be the guy who you walk into a gym and ask, why did they take Zach Collins over you?
I have a comparison. It's probably one of the craziest comparisons, but we haven't seen a guy that big, that shifty, and that can handle in a while. And one of the first comparisons I had, and he doesn't shoot it like him, but I think like Antoine Walker would be a superstar in this era, right?
Yeah.
Because he was such a matchup problem because he was thick shoulder, he was strong. But, I mean, we all remember, the younger crowd might not remember, but Cybertwine.
YouTube it.
Yeah. And Antoine was handling the ball, and he was such a mismatch. And I think Walker, he's not the shooter as Antoine, but I could see him as the guy that you put a big on him. He's got the handle where he can, you know, beat him off the dribble.
Yep.
Then you put a smaller player on him. He's not as polished in the post yet, but he's so strong. He can just bully his way. But then if you send help, he can make all the right reads.
Yeah.
And so I think that maybe if the outside shot comes along, you could have a mini Antoine Walker type weapon. Another guy that comes to mind that was that big and could handle that I'd feel comfortable initiating the offense with was Anthony Mason. You're a Knicks fan, so you remember how...
I'm a Bulls fan. I'm from New York. I'm a Bulls fan, though.
Oh, you're a Bulls fan. My bad.
Yeah, I'm a Bulls fan. Bad. Albert's the Knicks fan.
Okay, that's right. So you remember how Anthony Mason was, and this was, I mean, in a different era where you didn't have fours that handled the ball, but he was a problem.
I love Mace's game.
Yeah, and so Walker has, I mean, those are some comparisons that I think I see a little bit of their game in his.
That's an interest. If you like combined Antoine and Mason, that's another like fun kind of comp for Jarris. I feel like, I mean, Antoine, I think his problem is he liked to shoot a little too much. Like if he kind of reined it in like Jarris has.
In this era, he'd be perfect in this era.
He would be.
At that era, everybody's like, oh, he takes too many threes. Because he may have been taking five a game. And that was just considered outlandish.
Yeah. You know what's funny? Like, I haven't looked at what the numbers actually are, but they probably are only like 4.5, 5 a game, right? Like,
yeah.
Which would be like, which is, you want your bigs to be shooting almost that much now. That's hilarious. All right, let's talk about GG Jackson, because this is a guy who you have been very high on, and it's easy to understand why. I think, you know, when you see a guy that big who's got as smooth of a jumper and a pull-up game as he's shown, it's easy to be infatuated with him. And, you know, I watch him. I was really hesitant to buy into his game coming into the year, because when I watched him in high school, I thought he was one of those guys who had motor issues sometimes. Like the games I watched, I'd be like, he should be grabbing every rebound. He's so much bigger and athletic than these guys. I get it. I see the pull-up stuff. And the stuff that I was worried about, I feel like he does play hard. I feel like he does have a good motor. So all of my concerns going into the year have kind of they kind of evaporated pretty quickly upon watching him. And now it's like the efficiency stuff. And I'm not super concerned because he is playing, you know, basically up, you know, a year. Do you even, you know, being that high, where are you at concern wise with, you know, the efficiency? Do you think that he's going to have people in his ear like you got to get to the rim a little bit more? You can't just settle. Like, do you think he's a situation guy in the NBA where he's got to go to the right team? Or do you think he might, even though he might take a couple of years, he's kind of like, he's going to hit?
I think he's going to hit. The way I look at it is, if he stays in his right class, and let's say he has a dominant high school senior season, which I think he would have, he's the number one recruit for next year.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm not very impressed with a lot of the guys that I've seen.
He's a projected number one pick next year. So as a team, you get the guy that you basically almost like you won the lottery, even if you get him at 6 or 7, you won the lottery for next year. He may take some time to develop. I mean, just on and off the court, not saying there's anything immature about him, but again, we're talking about a guy that will be 18 years old.
Right.
And has never left his hometown. So those are like some of the factors that concern that are a little concerning, but I like the skill set. I like how he's changed his game in a sense over the years. Like if you watched him 2-3 years ago, he was like a finisher, a rim runner. Then you started seeing like, okay, he can be a pick and pop guy. And then now you just start seeing like the pull-ups, the footwork. And I think he just has so many tools in his toolbox that if it's, you know, if he puts it all together, I think he could be like an amazing weapon and crazy mismatch. I'd like to see him become a better passer.
Yeah.
But I think that can come over time. I would like to see him go to the right situation, the right fit. There's a few guys that I just want to see go to San Antonio because I think there's so many opportunities to thrive there. You know, I think obviously a point guard position, obviously like the center spot are some positions that they could have open. But I think that I believe that when it's all said and done, he's going to be a top 7 player in this class. So in 5 years, when you do a redraft, you'd be like, okay, he's a top 7 guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's not very hard to envision that. The passing is an interesting conversation. 'Cause like, I completely get it. Obviously that has been one of, you know, the major weaknesses. He's way more turnover prone than he is likely to make a play. But he's not selfish. You know, like he'll move off the ball, I think. Like sometimes he might take some shots that look selfish, but I don't think he's purposely looking guys off. I think he will make an extra pass at times. If he gets double in the post, he'll kick it back out. Like he's not going to force stuff that way. I think he just settles for that jumper sometimes when, you know, maybe if you're looking at the NBA context where you want to play a little bit more 0.5 and you should move off of it to get something better. He hasn't learned that yet. But as somebody who's worked with high school kids and coached high school kids for 10 years now, every time they jump up a level, you notice that for a lot of them, it takes a little bit of time for them to catch up to that speed.
Yep.
And he's jumping up a level and he's skipping a grade. So if he was coming out and hitting some of these shots while breaking down the defense and making plays at the same time, I would have been floored. Now you're talking about somebody who would have been in the top 3 conversation rather than, you know, top 10, potentially lottery. So I give him a pass on that. Now it's not going to get easier next year because he's gonna be jumping up another level. And I think a team, if they're going to develop him, they're going to try to simplify his role before they give him a ton of freedom, especially most of the teams that are, you know, they've been in the lottery for a while. And unless somebody jumps up, you know, they all have guys who were going to be carrying a lot of the load as far as like the playmaking and whatnot. So I'm not yeah. super concerned about that aspect of his game. I want to talk about a guy who I've been really starting to like his film a lot now.
Bryce, can I ask you one question?
Yeah, of course.
What do you think GG's position is? Like, to me, he's a big.
What do you mean by big? Like a five? Because I think he's like a four.
Yeah. So everybody's position metrics are a little different. I think he's a four. Maybe a guy that can close lineups as the five when you're looking just to go small and just create some type of mismatch. No, I don't think he's going to be like a guy that can anchor your defense.
Right.
But yeah, so some people think he's a wing. I don't see him. I think his best advantages are at the four, not as a three. As a three,
I think you could play him as a three in certain lineups.
Yeah.
With certain kinds of players. I don't think that should be his full-time spot.
Yeah.
I think he moves his feet well enough on the perimeter, but I mean, you look at some of the threes now and they're like twos. You know, like there's a lot of these guys are quicker teams playing three guard lineups and you know, while he has a size advantage, it's like you want him chasing some of these guys around or I think he can do it on switches. I think he'll be able to handle the physicality because obviously like his body is nowhere close to where it's going to be physically 4 years, 5 years from now. And he's got big, broad shoulders. Like I think he's going to be a beast if he puts in real time in the weight room.
Yeah.
But, you know, to be a five, you also have to be the quarterback defensively.
Yeah.
And that's something he's going to have to prove over time. I don't think that's a question we have the answer to right now.
Yeah, and one thing I like about him is when I watched the Eastern Michigan game, there were times where he had Imani Bates switched on him, and he took him to the block. And I love that mentality of you're too skinny. And I mean, Gigi's not a big dude, right?
No.
I think his body will fill out, and he should be able to play at 240, 235. But I think right now he's listed at 215. Who knows what Imani weighs, like $160, $170. But I love the fact that when he had that matchup, he didn't face up. He didn't dance with the ball. He just went right at him.
Yeah.
And I like that mentality because I think that's a good mentality to have when you know that you have, you know, the ball handling and the footwork and the shot creation to create your own shot. But if you see a mismatch, at least what you think is a mismatch, to just simplify it and just go right to the block. So that was a player too that really stood out to me about GG.
Well, that's kind of what we were talking about with Jet.
Yeah.
Right? Like adding that part to his game where you get a guy like Imani on you who you could just bully physically.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
can
a mentality
you
kind of, thing that I
yes.
that I look at.
Yeah, and a guy who I love who has that mentality is Bryce Sensabaugh. he'll take you into that post as much as the offense will allow him to.
Yeah, bully ball.
What do you think? Like, he's also a confusing prospect. And I've really, like, I have him in my top 10 now. Mm-hmm. I think his sustained production at the level he's producing in a good conference is really impressive. I think he's a handful. He's dumb skilled. But with all that said, you do also have to question, is a coach going to let him play that way? Now, he has the three-point shooting ability to, you know, play multiple kinds of roles, but is that why you are drafting him if you're just drafting him to be a shooter? So do you think a team is going to allow him to do his, you know, DeMar DeRozan impression?
He's going to be a guy that it's all about fit.
Yes.
Which, I mean,
that's most prospects.
For
most.
Everybody. But here's the thing about him. So you have him top 10, right?
I do, yeah.
So I have him, I think, 15, no, maybe 16. But I think he is going to be the biggest riser around draft time.
Mm.
My prediction is he's this year's Dyson Daniels, maybe even Patrick Williams.
Okay.
Because this is what I'm anticipating happening. He's going to get down 10 pounds. He's going to slim down.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to shoot the cover off the ball in workouts. And then once he starts destroying the first few guys in the 2-on-2 workout. Think about it. If you're in a work, like, and I always try to
he's too big.
From the perspective of a GM and the perspective of an agent. If I'm an agent and I see my client is matched up against Bryce Sensabaugh and this team is doing 1-on-1, 2-on-2 workouts, I'm pulling them out. Mm. There's no sync defense. It's just you and him on that island to where he might outshoot your guy in a shooting drill, and he might punish him in 2-on-2, 1-on-1, 3-on-3, whatever.
You better hope he got tired from some of the conditioning stuff beforehand.
Exactly. But that's why I think, like, once he sheds some pounds, then the athleticism is going to pop out a little bit more. And I think the only thing that's going to stop him from rising into the lottery range is if there's some concerns about the two. I think he had two torn meniscus in high school. Mm. If the medicals come out concerning. But he's the guy that I think could be the workout guy that all of a sudden you start seeing his stock rise and then you start seeing people pulling out of workouts because it's just – he just has so many advantages that are going to pop out in workouts. And he's doing it in 5-on-5 too. Like, I don't know what the percentages are now. Last time I looked, it was like around 46, 47% from three.
Yeah, he's I think he's at like still at 45, 46. I think he's like 50, 46, 80 or 80, something.
Yeah.
You could make an argument him and Brandon Miller are the two best freshmen in the country.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know, so I agree. I do think he's going to rise because, you know, like he obviously needs to lose some pounds, but you could tell that it's a possible for him. Like he's not, I don't think he's ever going to be like super cut and lean. Like, I don't know if he has the body type for that, but he's got like he's kind of cut up top, like by with the shoulders and his arms. Like he
it's
is going to
natural strength.
It's he's brute NBA strength. He's got long arms. Like, and man, the dude's skilled, man. Like, and one of the things that I'm almost surprised he doesn't have in his bag, like, he doesn't even have like a step back yet. Like, his step back is almost like he's tiptoeing. Like, he doesn't create any space to it. And once he gets that, like, he's got a shifty handle. He's going to face you up, put a shoulder into you, move you off your spot. High release, like he's gonna be able to get any shot he wants. It's gonna be really fun seeing him rise up during that process or what the dialogue is and what, you know, agents are planting and what we're hearing about him. Another guy who I think could be like that too is Max Lewis. A guy that you like. I recorded earlier today with Jalen Clark, and Jalen was telling me, like, he's like, we worked out together over the summer, and we were going at each other for an hour. He's like, Max is like that. Like, this is a guy, he's got the respect of his peers. His team is not very good and they're not winning, but you just see the skeleton of like every skill that you want out of this modern day wing. I mean, how much do you think his team success versus like his individual skill is going to kind of weigh on where he ultimately goes?
I mean, I have him in the lottery, right?
Yeah.
And it leads to so many discussions, and I'm sure you've probably got it too. Like, you know, it's almost like when we say, well, you can't hold you can't hold the Thompson or Brandon Miller's age against him.
Right.
And then the same thing about the Thompson twins.
Yeah.
So there now is the thing of you can't hold Imani Bates's team against him, but you still like Max Lewis. But I like Max Lewis, and you guys are the ones that put it out there that he prefers Max instead of Maxwell. Now he can shoot. He's athletic. I liked him last year. I thought last year he was really good in the games that he played. I thought his shot selection was just awful. Like, I thought he was just out there hooping.
Right. And well, you know, from that lack of experience that he had.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes hooping is good. Like, I have this theory, right?
I love hoopers.
That if you go to a bad team like Houston, you better know how to hoop, because if you're out trying to play the right way,
you're not having a good time. It's like when you show up to the pickup and you're trying to make the extra pass, and
yes,
you ain't never getting that back.
You're going to average 6 points a game trying to play the right way. If you're in Houston, you better hoop, because these guys are going for the numbers. That's why I think Garuba is going to be a lot better when he goes to another team, because he's, you know, he's used to the structure and all that. And
yeah,
those guys are, they hoop.
Real Madrid.
Yeah, so Maxwell has that, where I think that, you know, if he ends up on a bad team, he's going to hoop. And he can play that type of basketball. But I've been impressed this year that it's a lot more controlled. It's the shot selection isn't as bad. He's been productive. He's been efficient. And he's a guy that I try to look at and say, all right, if he wasn't at Pepperdine, if he were at Kansas, if he were at Kentucky, or if he had the hype that some of these other freshmen have, would we have him as a lottery pick? And my answer to that is yeah.
Agreed.
And he, I mean, I don't think, other than team success, I don't think that he could have had a better season as far as like helping his draft stock.
Yeah, he's still, his shooting efficiency is still crazy good. You know, he's got all the eye test stuff that you would you would want. I think the playmaking feel is getting better and better each game.
And he's scoring like I feel like he's scoring within a system. It's coming to him easy.
Yeah.
It's not like,
which is hard because that Pepperdine team is not very, like,
I thought they're gonna be better with two potential, you know, NBA level guys.
Yeah.
But it's like it's coming to him, while for those that try to make the argument about Imani looks like I'm trying to get my 25 every night. Like this is my goal, is to come out and kill and get my 25. Wow. I think Lewis has the same mindset, but it's like, I'm gonna get my 25, but it's going to come within the flow of the offense. I'm gonna have to create, you know, when I have to, but you know, it just seems like there's a little bit more flow to it.
What do you think about Imani right now? Because I think everybody, for the most part, had completely given up on him as a prospect. You know, with some of the offseason stuff, he obviously had a tough year last year. And I mean, I feel like he's kind of played as well as he possibly could, given the expectations. Do you think there are any first round outcomes for him? Or do you think there's just too much baggage and a team is like, he's got to be a second rounder if we're going to take him?
Yeah, I have an article coming out, and I interviewed multiple scouts and got different opinions on it. And the opinions are wide. I mean, I've heard first round, and then, you know, maybe some of it was kind of in the moment. It was like the day after he had like that 29 straight.
Yeah.
Everybody said that has made them think twice, but there's always a but, right? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you talk to a scout about a prospect, and they tell you the things that they like. But with Imani, it's always but. And I've heard that, you know, they think that he just needs to go to the G League.
Mm.
And can he handle it? It's like one guy said, I think it's going to be a test. Whoever drafts him, they'll probably draft him in the second round, and they'll send him straight to the G League. And it's going to be an absolute test of – how does he handle it? And it's not necessarily a talent thing. And I also think that Imani has been, I mean, some of the criticism against him has kind of been unfair. And the reason I say it's unfair is because our expectations for him after the Sports Illustrated cover, you know, they said he's going to be the number one pick, compared him to the next Kevin Durant. So anything less than that, people are going to be disappointed, right?
Right.
And then it turns into, you have the people that are disappointed calling him a bust. Then you have the people that support him are like going above and beyond. And it turns into like this huge divide. But he's only 18. He's still young. I think the biggest concern is he played for Jalen Duren for a circuit, I think for a session or so. But the biggest concern is, he's had his most success when he's been in position to be the man, the first, second, third option.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard people say, well, even when he was really good in high school, he was still playing 15U or 16U, then he's never really been held accountable. It's somebody may like him.
And it only takes one. It only takes one.
Yeah. But I think the consensus is like anywhere between late first to maybe in the 40s.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there's a role for the skill set that he has. Is he going to buy into?
Yeah, that's the big concern that I've heard everybody say.
Playing with that skill set in an NBA context, which is probably like a guy who's like running off screens and catch and shoot and being like a heat check guy, like almost like a bigger Malik Monk.
Or a bigger, you know, Jordan Poole in a sense.
Right. You know, like, cause and look, if you can buy into that, if he can maximize that, that's a guy who's gonna make a lot of money.
Yeah. But that's the concern is,
yeah,
is he going, does the mindset say I'm the number one option? Because, you know, if you're late first round, second round, you have to come in and fill a role, a specific mm-hmm. role. And you're not going to have a lot of freedom to do stuff outside of that role. And even like a Jordan Poole, who a lot of people were, I mean, he still ended up going first round, was like 28th pick or something like that. Yeah. But he was a guy that people knew he could score, but his style of play just seemed a little too 1-on-1-ish. And even he had to go down to the G League. But I think Jordan Poole's irrational confidence is what makes him a $100 million player. Because he was like, yeah, I know you guys want me to play this role, but I'm Jordan. This is who I am. And when I get in, I'm still going to be me. Because, you know, I think if the wrong team would have tried to turn him into a point guard.
Yeah.
Or tried to put him in a box. And so it did work for him. And we've seen other guys that it didn't work out for. I think, like, different skill set, but like a Malik Newman comes to mind. A guy that was always, like, the primary.
Cam Thomas.
And I think Cam has I think he's a hired gun. Right? But I mean, he's like the epitome of extreme confidence.
Yeah.
He's getting them up. but yeah, and I wasn't really high on Cam Thomas. I was high on, like, from a fun to watch, you know, like, this guy is, I mean, he might go for 40.
Yeah.
But from a team fit, I was like, oh man, it's going to be tough. And I think I was on the live draft show the year he was drafted, and I made the comment like, oh, I can't wait until he waves KD off.
Yeah.
to go ISO. But I think he can help Brooklyn, because, I mean, you know that you can't leave him open, right? You know that he's a threat and he's always going to be aggressive, and they have some guys on their team or a guy on their team that's not going to be aggressive. So
yeah.
But yeah, Amani's going to be a very interesting storyline between now and the draft. And if he goes undrafted, that would not surprise me at all.
Me either.
If he goes 25th, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah. He's going to be a wild card that is going to be really fun. And the inverse of Amani Bates, I feel like, is Chris Murray, a guy who completely plays within himself. I saw him a couple of weeks ago against Rutgers, and he was actually more impressive in the game that I went to against Rutgers than the game against Rutgers I went to last year when I went to go see Keegan. And obviously they're twins, and obviously there's a lot of similarities. He's a guy who is mostly being projected in that like 20 to 25 range right now. Mm-hmm. And I get it, because when I look at my board, I see that I usually have him probably in that range. But then I ask myself, are there going to be 15 guys 5 years from now who have a better NBA career than Chris Murray? Right. So for
then
me,
I ask myself, is the 1 year difference between him and Keegan a 20 spot difference, as far as, because I mean, the numbers are similar.
Yeah. Very similar. Like, I mean, I think he just had another huge game, like filling up the stat sheet. He's a good shooter, great demeanor. You know what you're getting out of him. So it's like, why can't he go in the lottery? I guess is what I'm thinking. If Keegan's a top five guy, why can't Chris Murray be drafted at 14?
And I think once you think of it in like different contexts, I think there's a chance he could, right? So let's say it's a team that just misses the playoffs, right? And they're picking like 15th or whatever.
Right.
And you look at him and say, all right, yes, he's a little older, not the sexiest prospect, may not have the highest ceiling, but he can come in and contribute right away. And we're going to get some really good years out of him while he's on a rookie deal. It's like right. he starts like his prime. Like he'll be at the beginning of his prime while he's making $3-4 million a year. So your mm-hmm. value for getting someone that good and that productive on a rookie deal, you're going to get a really good bang for your buck. You're not going to spend the first couple years developing him. I think he can come in and contribute right away. And I think I had him going to the Lakers on my mock, which I still had him, you know, going pretty, I guess, late first round. Well, you know, I don't know. The way the Western Conference is right now.
Everything shakes up crazy.
So
unless you're Spurs or the...
Yeah, I mean, you can be like eighth and you can be 23rd in a matter of a couple of days. But I look at like, you know, a team like the Lakers where I had them going. If you're the Lakers, that's kind of perfect in a sense because he's going to come in and play right away. He's going to knock down mm-hmm. open shots. He's mature. You can play him and you know, help you win games. And you're not going to pay him a whole lot of money. You're going to get
exactly
really
what
good value.
A team like that needs.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's some other teams, you know, maybe, you know, a Brooklyn or, I mean, there's a logjam with Memphis.
I mean, if Portland makes the playoffs and Chicago gets that pick, like Chicago's a team, I think that he could fit in really nicely on, you know, I think there are outcomes and I feel like when it's like put out into the conversation like that, it's kind of like, you can't take him over, you know, prospect X. Like, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of guys like Noah Clowney or Terquavion Smith or somebody, you know. But like an NBA team might be like, he's a much safer outcome to help us do the job we want than a guy like Turk is, who, while I know you're very high on him, and I think he's, for good reason, he's another guy I think could go in the lottery as well. There is an outcome where he just can't handle the physicality. He's inefficient, can't finish, picked on defensively. Mm-hmm. And a guy like Chris Murray just offers that stability that, you know, while he might not have that high end outcome, sometimes you need safety.
Yeah. And I think like a GM may say, you know, I'm taking Chris late lottery. Because I'm trying to win now. I'm at the point where I've been in the lottery too many years in a row, right?
Yeah.
So I need a playoff appearance for an extension.
Yeah.
And it's a question that I asked before, and I never thought of it until someone had mentioned it to me, an NBA person mentioned it to me. And they were like, you know, if you're a GM, and they were like, sometimes you have to think about best player available, which may be 2 to 3 years down the line. I may not even be there.
Right.
Or the guy that can help me win now, help me get my contract extension where I don't have to move my family and I get a little bit more security. And that's the situation that sometimes a GM is faced with. And I mean, just I'm not knowing off the top of my head speaking about anybody in particular, but I do think there's been a bunch of teams that have been in the lottery too many years in a row, and you're going to need a safe, high character guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm like Charlotte, and I mean, they're going to be picking high.
Yeah.
But if there's a situation where they trade Plumlee and they get a first or something like that,
right.
He's the guy that I would want in that locker room in Charlotte. High
no
character
doubt.
Guy, knows his role. And he's a safety valve for Melo. So, but yeah, I mean, he's a guy that I think that the draft world, we could be undervaluing him, while a GM could say this guy can come in right away and play. And, you know, not he may not be the sexiest prospect, but he can come in and contribute right away. And we know
he'll get it done. He'll do his job. Like, he could be like Taj Gibson, you know, like a modern day Taj Gibson. Just come into work, hard hat, lunch pail, all of that. The last guy before I get you out of here, and, you know, I'll finish. We got to finish with an international guy because, you know, you are the international guru, is a name that I've heard is starting to heat up a little bit behind the scenes. And I think can potentially heat up as we get closer to the draft, similarly to how Usman Jang did last year. And that's Rayon Rupert.
Okay. Yeah. So he's, you know, the intrigue is the defense. It's like 7'2", 7'3" wingspan, 6'6". You know, he missed some time with a broken wrist. And I actually haven't met him, but I'm good friends with his agent. So he shares the same agent as Wembanyama. And we talked about him. I went to Africa with Buna Njai a few weeks back, and we talked about him. And first thing he's like is, where do you have Ryan on your board? where is he on your board? And I do think that he could also be like a riser just because – I mean, the 7'3 wingspan is intriguing, and he's shown enough offensive flashes where you think like, okay, he can at the minimum be a 3-and-D guy, but he's shown some ability to make plays out of pick and roll. But yeah, he's somebody that I have in the first round. I have going, I want to say either 19th or 20th. When I did my mock, the Knicks had back-to-back picks at 19 and 20, and I had him going to the Knicks with one of those picks. But yeah, if he shoots the ball well in workouts, I think he's somebody that could definitely be on the rise also.
I feel like he's actually like the perfect guy for the Knicks right now. Like they need one of these multi-position, modern, versatile kind of guys. The guy that they took a shot on in Cam Reddish, but you know, maybe somebody who they feel like is a little bit more likely to pan out and that they actually would feel invested in. Yeah, I love his raw tools. And I think eye test wise, I think his shot is pretty fluid.
Isn't it like a long release? Do you feel like it's kind of maybe it's just his arms are so long, it looks a little different?
I mean, I don't get super concerned about like speed necessarily. I'd rather the function and the form be there. And I think the speed of a release is something that is easier to work on than if you have really bad footwork or you have a wonky upper follow through or something. But yeah, I mean, if he was shooting it effortlessly with a 7'2 wingspan and that defense, like this is a guy who, you know, you're talking about as a top 10 guy. But if he shows in workouts that release is a little bit quicker, and obviously, you know, that'll be a point of emphasis once his season is over, he's going to be an intriguing guy because, man, that wingspan, he obviously is going to have to get thicker and put on weight. And I think that'll be a process. I don't think like Sensabaugh, who could just, you know, diet and get in the gym and lose weight leading up. I don't know how much weight he could really put on as a young guy, but I think that'll be something that happens over time. But yeah, he's got really intriguing skills, and there's a lot of teams in this draft that have multiple picks.
Yeah.
And he's the kind of guy, I think, if you have multiple picks, like he's one of those upside plays where even if he's a little bit of a mystery, you could take a Jalen Williams and a Usman Jang and feel safe about Jalen. And all right, well, Usman can develop at his own pace.
Yeah. What's going to be interesting with him is he missed so much time with the wrist injury. And I mean, I've been to Australia. That's not a trip around the corner. Like you really have to plan for that trip. And so I wonder how many teams have actually had the opportunity to scout him live.
Right. Yeah.
And I mean, he'll be in Dallas this summer working out, so I'll get a chance to watch him up close and probably do some video stuff on him there. But yeah, I just wonder like how many teams are they, you know, kind of changing up their schedules to go watch him live because again, that's a very long trip to watch for one game. And I mean, I went to watch LaMelo and RJ play. So that was 2019. I went from Beijing, and it was so far that I might as well have came home to Dallas and grabbed the coat and then went back. So that Australia trip, you'd have to plan it to where you're there maybe to catch two, maybe three games to kind of get your you know, get your time. And I don't know how much time is left in their season. I don't think they have a really long season,
mm-hmm.
but like I said, I just wonder like how many teams are actually going to get a chance to scout him live. I can't imagine all 30 teams are going to say that we saw him live.
No, unless you want to throw in a little vacation at the same time while you're there to make it worth your while, hit the beaches and whatnot. But yeah, he seems like a guy who's going to be a tape and workout guy. Now, it's interesting. You're a Dallas guy. What is it about Dallas? Because it seems like such a random place for all of these NBA players to work out together. What is it about the Dallas scene that seems to be like, I guess, like growing in popularity to kind of train there?
Yeah. You have Tyler Ralph and Tim Martin, two really good trainers who it's funny because when I first started my basketball journey, they were starting theirs too. So we all kind of came up around the same time and two totally different styles, but they have so many players. And then you just look at the talent in Dallas. Like last year, there were five McDonald's All-Americans, and the high school players work out with the pros. And so, you know, between those guys, like the comp sport guys, so which is Boone and Njai's guys, they work out with those two guys. So Victor's been working out with Tim Martin for the past few years. You know, last year's quite a few guys that kind of trained in the area. It's a big enough city to where, you know, like if you're trying to pull a prospect away from his comfort zone, he can still be in a big city. It's away from like Vegas. And well, most guys are in LA, Miami. But it's like I said, it's centrally located. And it's not as expensive as those cities. So it is becoming a hotbed. But then there's just so many local guys. I mean, from Tyrese Maxey to Kay Cunningham, Julius Randle, you know, just from this year's draft, Keontae George, Anthony Black, Jordan Walsh, Cason Wallace, all those guys, you know, grew up playing with each other. So I think this summer is even going to be crazier as far as just guys working out in Dallas.
Man. I can't get into a conversation about Keontae George right now. I would have too many glowing things to say. And we've been going for over an hour, and I don't want to keep you any longer. But, man, it's been too long since we've gotten a chance to do this. So I appreciate you coming on the show. And you are one of the hardest workers in this space. So you know everybody at the No Ceilings crew respects what you do, and we love your work. So again, appreciate you taking the time. Plug, you know, all the things that you got going on.
Yeah, first of all, I want to give you guys a shout out for what you guys have done. Like, you guys have taken this you guys have taken this draft space by storm. And I know I used to joke around and say, man, you guys are an army, but you guys are literally like Walmart. You're just gobbling up all the best talent and putting together your own collective. And it's definitely a different vibe that you guys have going as far as like the creativity.
Yeah. We like to have fun.
the home and away. So many different perspectives, which is, I mean, it's dope that you guys have a team. And I wouldn't be surprised seeing like each person kind of getting plucked away from different NBA by different NBA teams. What's crazy is one day I was in the car, and I guess I can tell the story now. So I was in the car with Ryan Rollins' agent, and it was one of your episodes, and we're just listening to it. I think we're on our way to watch Ryan work out. But no, I mean, you guys are doing great work. Keep it up. I get the notifications every day in my inbox. I read them, and it's definitely made me step my game up because I'm like, these guys are working. And then there's times where I get upset with you guys. Like I had this Khalil Ware article that I was getting ready to publish. And then you guys beat me to it. I'm like, well, I can't put it out right now. I got to wait a couple weeks because and me and you agree on a lot of things. Yeah. Right. And so sometimes I'm like, oh, I got to put this on the back burner because No Ceilings did their own version of it, which is similar to mine. But props to you guys, man. I just love the work that you guys are doing. And then as far as me, I'm on Locked On NBA Big Board podcast 5 days a week. And it's a lot of podcasting 5 days a week. Got to record after this. And then I have the NBA Big Board newsletter. It's on the paywall. And I try to get two or three articles a week. And it's a combination of, you know, what Chad Ford had. He always used intel. I don't think Chad really used a lot of his own scouting reports, but he was more of a reporter as during the later stages of his career. And so I try to combine what made Chad's newsletter successful, but then adding my own spiel to it and my own opinions and film studies. But so you get a lot of different quotes from NBA scouts and personnel, and then I mix in, you know, how I feel about it. That's where you can find me at NBABigBoard.com and the NBA Big Board podcast.
Make sure you go subscribe to all of the above and follow Rafael on all the social platforms as well, because one of my favorite perspectives. You're never afraid to, you know, cave into what the consensus is, and you know, that's important in this space where groupthink is just, it runs rampant. I think a lot of times those narratives shape certain things, and I think that it's important for people to go against the grain and not do it to go against the grain. You know, when you say something, you mean it. You're not just, you know, it's not a first take, undisputed hot take thing just for clicks. So make sure you go read and subscribe to all of Rafael's stuff. And again, man, I appreciate you doing this, and we got to do it again soon. But tomorrow you will have a Deep Dives podcast episode with Nick on the No Ceilings feed. So make sure you tune into that. And until next time, we're out. Peace.